Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Bad and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and for the most part, all Americans. Let's just be honest, as we continue to dig into the latest disappointing facts as well as reactions to the carnage in Orlando Sunday morning at the Pulse Club. 49 people dead, 53 people injured. There's still, I believe, 6 that they just reported this morning, Jim, that are in critical condition at the hospital. So hopefully that 49 number does not change. But as we go to our first bad martini, yesterday, FBI Director James Comey briefly spoke with reporters talking about the events of that morning in terms of the killers' calls to 911 in the midst of the act of terrorism. And then he also explained the FBI's previous contact with this terrorist that happened on multiple occasions. Here's his description of how the FBI first got this guy on their radar back when Mateen was working as a security guard at a courthouse, of all places.
He made some statements that were inflammatory and contradictory that concerned his coworkers about terrorism. First, he claimed family connections to Al-Qaeda. He also said that he was a member of Hezbollah, which is a Shia terrorist organization that is a bitter enemy of the so-called Islamic State, ISIL. He said he hoped that law enforcement would raid his apartment and assault his wife and child so that he could martyr himself.
That seems pretty dramatic, pretty radical. So the FBI opens an investigation. Comey says that they infiltrated some confidential sources, recorded some calls, but ultimately they canceled the investigation after 10 months because of this.
He admitted making the statements that his coworkers reported, but explained that he did it in anger because he thought his coworkers were discriminating against him and teasing him because he was Muslim.
Jim, you just talked about martyrdom and Hezbollah and ties to Al-Qaeda because he was mad that day. There's nothing more to it.
Greg, is there any like Greek terror group you've ever pledged or pretended to be a part of or anything like that? Because all the times, you know, the recording equipment doesn't work correctly. You know, I always say, you know, Greg, you know, my IRA brothers and I will have vengeance upon this studio.
Right.
No, that's not normal behavior. And how did that meeting back at the FBI office go? So did you figure out if this guy claiming to be in Hezbollah and, you know, did you find out if it's real? Nah, he just said it because he was angry. Oh, okay. All right. No, the problem for Comey is that they can go through every like on the one hand, I'm glad they're laying out all of the steps they every little interaction they had with the guy. But the end of it, they still said, nah, not a threat. And it was very, very incorrect there. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday. I was coming forward in a piece. We talked about the San Bernardino shooter got past the Department of Homeland Security's counterterrorism screening. The FBI had talked to one of the Boston bombers. One of the guys who shot up the Draw Muhammad contest down in Texas had actually been sentenced to 3 years probation for making false statements to the FBI during a previous FBI investigation of him. The Chattanooga shooter never propped up on the FBI's radar screen, but his father was investigated for making donations to terror groups. Almost all of these figures have some previous interaction with law enforcement on suspicions of terrorism. It doesn't pan out. And now, on the one hand, I want to, you know, whack Comey around with a wet noodle for this. On the other hand, he did say late last year that they have about 900 current investigations of people they think who either might be ISIS, might be tied to ISIS, or ISIS-like Islamic groups. That seems like a lot. And if their situation is, look, we just don't have the manpower, the caseload has grown enormous, we just can't keep track of all these guys, I'm going to have a certain amount of sympathy for the FBI because this is a really important day. But clearly they need to go back and periodically check on some of these people. What's extremely frustrating is that it's now become a predictable pattern, not just of what some people have kind of sarcastically called the sudden jihad syndrome, this idea that, you know, seemingly normal, and I'm making air quotes as I say this, Muslims suddenly and without warning become jihadists and start lashing out and killing people. But what's even more kind of fascinating is at some point they said something or did something. At some point they've been on the FBI's radar screen and the FBI has determined not enough of a reason to keep them under surveillance or consider them a threat. And it turns out to be completely wrong. So at this point we're being asked to keep put a lot of faith in our intelligence agencies and law enforcement and all this. And I know they're all good folks, but time and again, they're just not getting it done.
That's true. And perhaps the most galling part is at the end where Comey said yesterday at the briefing, is there anything we could have done differently? No, I really don't. I think we pretty much did everything we could have done in that situation. Well, obviously not, because not only did those things probably raise red flags that should have been pursued a little bit more, simple reporters over the past 24 to 48 hours have dug out things that the FBI apparently hadn't uncovered back in the day. Not to accuse you of being a simple reporter. You're an exceptional reporter.
That's it. I'm calling the IRA.
But if the media could figure this stuff out in 48 hours, the FBI probably should have found it over a 10-month span.
It doesn't seem unreasonable to ask that question, Greg. And everything, you know, it does seem like this is a recurring pattern with terrorists on U.S. soil.
Jim, I have a feeling yesterday was not a good day with the Jim Comey briefing. I'm just wondering if somewhere in the bowels of the FBI building, he is talking to his subordinates and saying, Hillary says she didn't break any laws with the emails, so I guess we just got to wrap this thing up.
That's cynicism, Mr. Corumbus.
All right. I've been accused of that before, and I largely plead guilty. On to the second bad martini now. And yesterday was official speech reaction day for the likely presidential nominees. Hillary yesterday talking about a number of things. First of all, let's go back a few months. This was Hillary Clinton at the Council of Foreign Relations about 6 months ago being asked about the term radical Islam, or at least addressing it in a speech she gave there.
Islam is not our adversary. Muslims are peaceful and tolerant people and have nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism.
And so when she and President Obama refused to refer to radical Islam, when the facts were pretty clear by Sunday afternoon, Donald Trump went after both of them, saying Obama should resign and Hillary should drop out. So when Hillary was on with Chris Cuomo of CNN, he asked her whether she's willing to use the term, and we got this.
And I have clearly said that we face terrorist enemies who use Islam to justify slaughtering innocent people. And, you know, whether you call it radical jihadism, radical Islamism, I think they mean the same thing. I'm happy to say either.
And then in her speech in Cleveland on Monday, Hillary Clinton saying it's time for somebody to get serious with these people who are funding terrorists.
For starters, it is long past time for the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Kuwaitis and others to stop their citizens from funding extremist organizations. And they should stop supporting radical schools and mosques around the world that have set too many young people on a path toward extremism.
Now that she's the presumptive nominee, Jim, she floats very easily between conflicting positions.
The Saudis, the Qataris, and the Kuwaitis are just the worst, and that's why I've taken millions of dollars from all of them through the Clinton Foundation. Between $1 and $5 million from Qatar or Qatar. Between $5 and $10 million from Kuwait, and between $10 million and $25 million from Saudi Arabia. And that's money they won't use for radical madrasas. And a lot of people have been saying that for a long time. We wish these nominal allies would crack down on these extremist organizations, stop their citizens from funding them, stop supporting radical schools and mosques and stuff like that. Greg, I just wish at some point Hillary had been in some position in the U.S. government where she could have raised this issue. If she had some influence over U.S. foreign policy where she could have really kind of pushed it. And if only she'd met with these foreign leaders, if only she could have done something about our counterterrorism policy, then maybe this, you know, things would have turned out differently. But unfortunately, she's been in the private sector her whole life, so there's really nothing she could have done, right? She gets it right. It's just she's just exactly the wrong person to make that argument. She's had a lot of opportunities to push this. And look, if she really couldn't get much progress on the Saudis or Qataris or Kuwaitis as Secretary of State, why do we think she'd be a lot more effective as president?
We don't.
Chirp. Yeah, the cricket's there. So this is what happens if you do a press conference. You would get questions like this, maybe.
Well, if the press were to actually ask serious questions instead of how does it feel to make history, that's why we have a vetting process. But apparently only works on one side. Actually didn't work on either side this year. But on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, there's been a lot of crazy aspects to this Orlando story. But this one, I think, shocked even the most cynical of us yesterday. This is the New York Post story. The ex-wife of Orlando mass killer Omar Mateen claimed Monday that she believed he was homosexual, as it was revealed that he frequented the gay nightclub where he staged the nation's worst massacre in modern times. Satora Yousafzai, who was married to Mateen in 2009 for 3 months, made the shocking claim on Brazilian television. Her fiancé, speaking in Portuguese on her behalf, said she believed that Mateen had quote-unquote gay tendencies and that his father had called him gay in front of her. This fiancé also claimed, and this is also troubling, the FBI asked her not to tell this to the American media. More reporting has uncovered that different men that he had been interested in have now admitted that he had gay tendencies and that he frequented the Pulse in Orlando on multiple occasions. So, Jim, again, more crack investigative work done there, but what do you make of this?
First of all, there is something deeply satisfying about a guy who, you know, presumably had the typically homophobic or gay-hating attitudes of an Islamist terrorist or ISIS type, forever being remembered with a New York Post headline, "He was gay." There you go, pal. The second thing, which is kind of fascinating, is this going to be the new excuse for closeted Islamists? What were you doing at the gay club? I was just scouting it for an attack. That's all I was doing. I'm totally not like that at all. I guess it'll be the Islamist equivalent of, not that there's anything wrong with that. So the other thing, which just as we were taping this podcast, Greg, a little bit of breaking news. The current wife of the Orlando shooter has told the FBI that she tried to talk her husband out of the attack. The FBI says she's cooperating. Greg, how do you think that conversation went? "Honey, I'm gay, but I'm going to go shoot up a gay club." And did she say, "Oh, sweetie, you really shouldn't," and then didn't call 911? She tried to talk him out of it. Well, if you fail to talk him out of it, maybe you should call the cops. Maybe that's it's kind of glaring here. This is a bizarre set of circumstances that she would be, "Oh, it's really terrible, but I had to wash my hair that night." I'm really kind of left wondering, a lot of people arguing, was she complicit or does this make her an accomplice? More to come out on this, but a twisted, bizarre, and sordid personal life of the Islamist shooter in Orlando. Not that we expected anything less than that, now did we?
This is probably opening up a massive can of worms that is best reserved for another three martini lunch. But given that news, Trump has gotten some praise and quite a bit of criticism yesterday for suggesting that people who notice something suspicious and don't report it ought to be subject to the criminal justice system as well. How does this feed into that?
I was going to say, there are times where Donald Trump speaks very broadly, and he's made the argument that the Muslim community doesn't do enough to crack down on extremists in their midst, that people know what's going on, but they won't report it to law enforcement. And people have debated whether that's a fair or accurate characterization. But if what we're hearing from NBC News about the wife is true, people are going to start thinking that. Wait a second. If you think your husband's about to kill a lot of people, why are you not calling the cops? Was this, was this out of a, and somebody's telling me, she might have done this out of fear. Well, when he leaves to go shoot up the club, then you call the cops. It's kind of a baffling set of circumstances here. And I think people are going to start seeing her as complicit and then kind of wondering, all right, how many other people in his family or in his circle knew that he was about to do this? We've already heard the coworkers describing him as menacing and threatening. We know that he was enough to get interviewed by the FBI 3 times. So each time this happens, it feels like an insult added to injury. That something terrible was imminent and about to happen, and people who had a certain amount of sense of this was coming down the pike didn't do anything about it. So, an interesting question of whether this wife is an aid and abettor instead of a bystander is, I think, going to be a major point of contention in the coming days.
The lone wolf story perhaps losing a lot of steam here. Mm. Jim, on that horrific note, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.